go into these healthcare professions wanting to help. They're caring professions, but then you forget to care.
Yeah.
And it's through your training, which is not always focused on care. It's because the environments that you work in are chaotic and high pressure. And it's because the systems don't really care about you as a provider.
Welcome to Learning on the Edge with SICK, the podcast where we explore individuals and organizations on the edge of social innovation through a design lens. The purpose of our Learning on the Edge series is to introduce some design concepts and tools to inspire our listeners to engage with social innovation.
In this month's episode, we're going to dive into a design thinking concept and tool that we find important for those who will be introducing a new process or innovation within the organization. Empathy and the design tool, the empathy map. Why don't we start with explaining what we believe empathy means to us within the context of business and healthcare. Nita, what is empathy to you?
Well, I actually wrote a blog post on this that is posted on our website. So www.sickhealth.ca. And if you click on blogs, it's called Emotional Intelligence in Design. And emotional intelligence is also known as EI. And this was defined by Jacob Morgan, who's an author and futurist, as a combination of empathy along with self-awareness. And I know you asked me what it means to me, and now I'm like quoting someone else, but basically, I really agree with the definition around empathy that Jacob Morgan talked about as the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And I'm sure you've heard this before. It's not a new definition, but what some have made is a distinction between empathy compared to sympathy. And this was actually brought out by Brené Brown, who you might have heard of. She's fairly famous, a social worker by training, and then she's done a bunch of TED Talks. She's done a lot of research around emotions. And she makes a really clear distinction between empathy and sympathy in a video that's posted on YouTube and that our blog links to.
What is in that video?
Brené, in this video, she actually refers to a nurse researcher named Teresa Weissman, talks about empathy as taking four key steps. Now, these are not steps in the traditional sense of doing one after the other, but they can be done concurrently. And she starts with perspective taking, so putting yourself in someone else's shoes, then trying to listen to the person and staying out of judgment, which is so hard because it's such a human tendency to judge, especially mm-hmm. like in communities.
Based off your own perspective too. Right?
Yeah. And then the third part to this is recognize emotion in another that's familiar to you. You may have felt it before. So things like sadness, anger, guilt. And then finally, and the most crucial step, is to communicate that you recognize that emotion. So the video goes on to show these animals with human characteristics interacting with one another. And the main character, if you will, is a fox who's stuck down in a deep, dark hole with a rain cloud over their head. And they're not happy, right? Like they're in this mm-hmm. dark hole. And they shout out that they're overwhelmed by whatever situation that they're in. And then there's a bear character and an elk character. And this really shows the distinction between empathy and sympathy. So the empathy reaction is the bear character climbing down the hole to be at the level of the fox and saying something like, I know what it's like down here. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sympathy reaction is kind of the opposite. It's the elk character sitting above the hole, shouting down and saying at least statements. So one example that she gives is, say, a woman is experiencing a miscarriage. And you might say, well, at least you know you can get pregnant. But that statement kind of comes across as hollow if you're the person sitting in that miscarriage and feeling the grief of having lost a child, right?
Yeah. That's really hurtful. Like,
yeah, right? Like, how many times have you heard at least statements?
Many times. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, right? Like, it's so familiar. It's such a human thing to say. And we don't say it necessarily to hurt someone else. Mm-hmm. I think we say it to try to make another person feel better. But it doesn't work.
Yeah, I can imagine from my own perspective, because all of us have been on that end where we're being sympathetic and we're saying, at least you know that you feel as though you're coming from a good place, but it might come across as pretty hurtful, but you don't know that until the recipient is sort of, you know, they're upset or they're backlashing, like, against what you just said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, definitely. And then
it might work sometimes, but in that sort of circumstance, it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really depends on the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So Brené goes on to say that rarely can a response like that make something better if you're in that really dark hole. And what makes something better is connection between humans. And you don't have to say anything. You just need to be there and be with that person going through that terrible thing in that moment.
Exactly. Sometimes words are not going to help. You just have to sit there with somebody and just, like, hold their hand or hug them or something. And that's empathy. That's just understanding where they're coming from, and they don't need anything else in that moment.
Exactly. That's a really good way to put it. Like, even physically being there, it's probably obviously been hard these past few years with the pandemic, and there's been a disconnect between us and our patients, like in healthcare settings, or mm-hmm. our family and our friends. But there are ways to try to bring this in. So I work part-time in a cancer center pharmacy, and there's a lot of barriers, physical barriers, that were put up during the pandemic, like the plexiglass at the counseling stations. And this pretty much disconnects you from the person on the other side, especially because these patients tend to be a little bit older and they often have difficulty hearing you behind the mask. But you can try to change that perspective by coming on the other side of the glass. And maybe you're taking a risk, but you're both masked, so the risk is pretty minimal. But just being in front of that person and being at their level as well. So if they're sitting, kind of crouching down beside them, if they're standing with them, mm-hmm. it makes a big difference in how the interaction goes.
Absolutely. I agree with that. There's a more human experience, it would be a human experience, just sort of more face to face without some sort of barrier or two mm-hmm. barriers, because you have the mask and the plexiglass.
So in our approach to social innovation, that we are trying to bring empathy for individuals can be extended to empathy for communities, including marginalized groups. And there's actually a quote in patient care literature that comes up: nothing about me without me. And this refers to really involving patients, caregivers, families in their own care. And that's part of empathy as well.
So just taking a patient and family and family-centered approach to care.
Yes, and I think an even more accurate description is what you mentioned, like making these experiences human-centered. And right now in healthcare, they're not so human-centered. I mean, they can be, but there are times when they're just not. And I'm sure we've all had those experiences as patients or providers going through systems of care, and they're lacking in terms of a human touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just wanted to transition into mentioning a podcast episode that we listened to, Bon Ku's Design Lab podcast, his March episode called, or one of his March episodes called, Designing Careful and Kind Care with Dominique Allwood. I completely agree with their interpretation of the way healthcare is today. They call it industrialized healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
They argue that it's humanely and financially unsustainable. And one of the quotes from the podcast is, healthcare has become industrialized, relentlessly pursued. However, industrialized healthcare turns patients into widgets and clinicians into production line workers, the work of caring reduced to processing people through the system. Industrial healthcare has exhausted caregivers and patients, and morally injured, burned out, and spent clinicians, making it humanly unsustainable. Which, I mean, the way that I look at it, yeah, absolutely. Like, I can see as somebody who would go in as a client or a patient into a hospital, and the way that they sort of just process you through, it's just, especially in the ER, because I've had that experience too in the ER. It's just one person after another, and yeah. What do you think about that, Nita? Because you're sort of on the other end, on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on both sides. I would say that very early on in my life, I was on the patient side. I went through healthcare systems as a young adult, navigating an eating disorder, and I felt like there was not a lot of support, and there was a feeling like you were just another patient. There was not a lot of design around different diverse types of patients. So people that were coming from different backgrounds, there wasn't a lot of people that looked like me in these healthcare settings when looking at eating disorder treatment facilities. So I was scared of being treated, and I never got formally treated, which really did not help my quality of life for many years. And I kind of had to dig myself out of the hole. So I was like the fox in Brene Brown's video, stuck in a hole, and there was no one coming down the hole to sit beside me. So I do have that perspective, but then I do also have the provider perspective as a pharmacist. And I see that more and more healthcare over the years has become industrialized. They use methodologies such as lean that come from the industrial revolution, and it's designed to improve efficiencies in the hopes that this improves the patient and provider experience. But how can you expect to improve experiences without including any experience data?
Exactly.
Right? And what kind of data do you need to include? What is experience data? That's kind of what we're going to talk about today when we talk about empathy and the empathy map and getting into what are patients and providers thinking and feeling during their healthcare journeys and how do they think experiences can be changed? Because a lot of the times they're the experts, but are we asking the experts? Not always. This kind of stuff tends to come top down and not always bottom up, although it's changing in recent years, but there's a lot of work to do in the healthcare industry. And I think, Sylvia, you can speak to other industries and maybe things we can learn from them.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like in other industries such as hospitality, even in banking, these businesses have gone through journey mapping, many of them, and to understand the customer experience. And customer service is one of the most important aspects of any other type of business. They usually train their staff on how to treat clients or customers. There's a lot more, although they don't call it empathy training, there is a lot more empathy training and learning how to listen and communicate with clients and understanding the client's perspective. So it's kind of wild to me that in most other industries, understanding the client's perspective is really important. including emphasizing with them if necessary. But then in places where you think you need it the most, such as in healthcare, it's not there. It's lacking. At least this is from my experience. And as Nita, you mentioned too, from the other side as well, like that's, it's also, it's just lacking both ways. I think there is a lot of opportunity in, to improve on the service provided to patients or clients at all levels in the healthcare process. It doesn't have to start and end with like the receptionist when you first walk into a hospital or clinic. Empathy needs to be something that is consistently presented by every single healthcare professional that the patient needs to meet with. Empathy becomes crucial when designing with stakeholders. For instance, when we talked about our library project in our first podcast episode.
Right. Actually, when we looked back at all of our first few podcast episodes, empathy played a crucial role in designing and...
Yeah, let's just do maybe a quick recap. So our first episode, we talked about social innovation with the library, where that project required developing empathy by connecting with library staff and directly with patrons, or patrons indirectly, sorry. Cultivating empathy allowed us to find insights around how people access health information and what their needs are, particularly in libraries located in food deserts. These insights helped us develop design criteria for prototypes around how healthy food information could be developed and accessed through patrons from the library. So that all of that information was in one spot, and it was all, and it's also free to all patrons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how you guys didn't have access to the patrons, but I think if you did, you would have included their voices directly in that project as well.
Yes, agreed. If we had the opportunity to speak with the patrons, then definitely that would have changed what type of data we collected. Mm-hmm. Might have changed or pivoted our design a little bit.
And when we spoke to Teresa in our second episode, Let's Talk Menopause, she talked about her own perimenopausal experience and the challenges that she faced around it. So physical changes, emotional changes, and this inspired her to get certified as a menopause practitioner and then go on to develop her own consultancy, Menopause Ed. And actually, we had some conversations before we recorded, and in our offline conversation, Teresa shared with us that she had hosted the first Menopause Cafe in Toronto. And this was an idea that was not hers, but originally came from the UK, where they're doing a lot more work with people around designing in healthcare. And in this type of setting, a Menopause Cafe, women can get together, talk about their experiences in this really informal way. Mm-hmm. And that just helps to develop empathy with them.
So it was a great episode. Mm-hmm. And then we spoke with Yanka about her transitional journey after she graduated graduate school. It drove her to create Well Millennial, an organization to help provide others with the support that she lacked when she was trying to find work herself. She has hosted a number of workshops, including one called Shifting Gears on Our Commute, which brought commuters together to discuss their experiences around transitioning to different work environments during the pandemic. These sorts of experiences could help organizations think about how best to support their workers with more flexible working arrangements. So like having remote work or hybrid work. So that's another important topic that is sort of an ongoing conversation among many organizations.
I love how hybrid work has become so much more common and people are more aware of the plight of workers, I guess, and how their conditions, their environments in which they work can really be optimized to improve their experience. And that applies not just during your work life, but before and after your work life. Like there's a, it's a continuum. So yes, we ended up talking to Mebs in our latest podcast episode around co-designing a personalized longevity playbook. And he talks about longevity as something that starts when you're born. Like when you're born, you're on the trajectory towards the end of your life. And basically he talks about his own transitional journey where that he was kind of pushed into a bit of an early retirement. I mean, it was his choice. Like he sold a company, but then he found himself thinking, what's next? What now? What do I do? Mm-hmm. And this allowed him to explore others' experiences with mid to late career transitions. He ended up speaking to hundreds of people around the world and forming a global supportive community called What's Next, which is so interesting because that's what he was thinking. And he turned it into this social enterprise. And in the summer of 2022, he hosted several experiments with the community that I personally was a part of. And these were really empathy engagements, right? He was trying to discover what are transitioners' challenges, what are their aspirations, and he's going to use these conversations to allow for the informed design of platforms and activities that really addresses the desire of transitioners to connect, communicate, and share with one another.
Mm-hmm. Also a great, great episode. Very, very important topics, I have to say, the last few episodes that we had.
Yeah, and so focused on empathy, then that's why we wanted to really talk about, like, what is empathy and how do we cultivate it and how can we use design to teach us about empathy?
I mean, there are different ways of doing it. The traditional ways would be just like observation, sketching, notes, ways of connecting with people. So surveys, interviews, focus groups. And then we have tools, which we're going to discuss one of the tools soon. So like empathy mapping and personas and journey mapping. One of the most important tools is looking at the empathy map. That could be a starting point. Why don't we describe what the empathy map looks like? So if you can imagine a box that consists of four quadrants, and then in the center, we have the user. So that could be the patient, that could be the clinician. And then in the four quadrants around the user, we have says, thinks, does, and feels. So basically with the empathy map, we're looking at what would the user say, what would the user think, what would the user do, and what would the user feel in a certain situation. So
And we're just to cite this, we're getting this from Business Model Generation, Osterwalder and Pigner, 2010. I know it seems a bit outdated, but these principles are really relevant even today.
Yes, exactly. Did you want to go through an example, Nita, with the empathy map?
Sure. So there was a recent patient encounter that I had a few weeks ago with a cancer patient who came to the pharmacy looking for a medication to control a chronic illness that had been out of control unrelated to their cancer. So we can use that and go through the empathy map.
Sure, we can start with, so that's our user or our patient there, or persona. The first question I have for you is, what does the client see in their environment?
If I was to get into the patient's shoes and look through their eyes, I would find myself in a lineup at first, because that's what I heard that they experienced. They went to one pharmacy and they had to be in a lineup. They were tired and they're seeing this chaos of a busy pharmacy. They're having to wait. And then they were told that they, well, that I guess that goes into what they hear. But if I just concentrate on what they say, see, they're seeing this harsh environment of chaos. There's some fluorescent lighting. It's not inviting. It's not like a home environment, right? It's like this pharmacy, but it's based in a large hospital, for context. And they have to navigate through this hospital. And I'm sure we've all experienced some of the wayfinding challenges around large Canadian hospitals. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're seeing. As you mentioned before, like going through a hospital is a really daunting experience.
It is. I mean, we should be investing more in wayfinding. As somebody who understands and draws and floor plans and all that stuff, that even there was one experience where I was navigating a hospital and I'm like, I don't know where I'm going because I don't see the signage, and I was lost. So that's not.
Yeah. So just for context, Sylvia is like an environmental designer, and she's having trouble navigating this environment. Then there's a big problem.
Yeah. It should be way more intuitive than it is. So just going back to the empathy map, what does the patient or client hear in this situation?
A lot of noise, a lot of ambient noise, others' voices. In the large teaching hospital where these pharmacies are located, there's often random overhead pagings. And then when she finally makes it to the front of the line, she's given a message that she really doesn't want to hear. The medication that she needs is not available from the first pharmacy where she normally goes. And she's referred to the main cancer center pharmacy where I work. And actually, the particular medication that she needs is not available there either. But somebody from the first pharmacy tells me, why don't you speak to her about it, even though we have to refer her to yet a third pharmacy. So she's not hearing what she wants to hear. She's getting mixed messages, and she's having to navigate through this hospital with all this noise.
Wow. Crazy. And what does the client say and do?
Well, I think she's really agreeable to following instructions. So she makes her way to the second pharmacy and I'm speaking to her. And if I can get into what she thinks and feels, which I think is part of the map as well, it kind of came out in our conversation. She's telling me that she's exhausted and that exhaustion is an actual trigger for her chronic illness that she's trying to get under control. And she's probably been impatient around having to wait for service and treatment, but she doesn't let it show.
Right.
Because I think she has a certain respect for the providers and what they say and following instructions. I'm feeling empathy for her. And I know she's also experiencing some anxiety because her illness is not under control and this is delaying her cancer treatment. And she really wants to get her cancer treatment going.
Exactly. Yeah. So you did answer that think and feel question that I had next. Outside of the empathy map, we have some other points that we can touch on in regards to this particular situation. What are her pain points?
Yeah, so the point of the empathy map is to try to kind of get to those pain points. So she's moving from pharmacy to pharmacy in a large teaching hospital that's totally hard to navigate. So that's definitely a pain point. Why are we requesting that she move around from pharmacy to pharmacy? Obviously, later I thought about it and I was like, this is not right. And then furthermore, she has lack of control of this chronic illness outside of her cancer, and she really needs immediate treatment. And she shared with me that fatigue or exhaustion is an actual trigger for that illness, which I'm not disclosing out of privacy, but we're creating more fatigue where we're telling her to move around from pharmacy to pharmacy. Clearly a pain point. And then finally, her cancer treatment is delayed and she really needs to get it back on track. And this is something that's bothering her and something she shared as well.
Mm-hmm. And what does she want to gain from this? Like, what do they want to achieve within this situation?
I think it's pretty simple. They want to feel better.
Yeah.
Have more energy, back on track with their cancer treatment, get control over their illness with the right medication and avoidance of triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not creating the environment that's conducive to getting them what they want to achieve and solving their pain points. And afterwards, when I thought about it, I thought, I failed. But it's not just me personally, it's the system failed.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we see things from the patient perspective? Why don't we bring medication to the patient rather than sending the patient around the hospital trying to find her medication?
Exactly. And especially a patient who's quite sick too. The system is just creating more problems for these patients. I mean, what are the key takeaways from this? I think this is a great example. We should be teaching healthcare providers more empathy in these situations, not just this situation, but like everyday situations in a healthcare setting. There needs to be more empathy coming from these providers.
Go into these healthcare professions wanting to help, their caring professions, but then you forget to care.
Yeah.
And it's through your training, which is not always focused on care. It's because the environments that you work in are chaotic and high pressure. And it's because the systems don't really care about you as a provider. We saw that during the pandemic. Providers were burned out, overworked. A lot of people left these professions, not just pharmacy. You've heard probably a lot in the media around a huge exodus of nurses from the profession. And nurses are the people that are actually trained to care, from my understanding of the training that they go through and my interactions with nurses in the hospital. And these are the ones that we need to provide that care, but we're not caring for them. We're not treating them like they need to be treated. And they're leaving.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, the system does not care, but we need to humanize the system a little bit more, because that's absolutely true. So if the providers are not cared for, then the patients get the grunt of it, basically. They just get the worst of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they definitely won't get the care that they need. And when you're in a vulnerable situation like that, you need that care. You need somebody to empathize and care for you. Patient that you mentioned while we were doing this empathy mapping exercise, if everybody that day was reminded that they have to be more empathetic with that particular day, then she probably wouldn't have to have gone through that whole process. Daily reminders,
possibly not.
A while. I don't know, but it's a start, I think.
Yeah, it's a process. That's what I've learned through design. Most of my life I've been trained in non-design discipline. So that's often really focused on outcome, and design takes that away and it focuses on process.
Yeah,
and journey. Continuously changing and the journey.
And improving.
And I love that about design. And I think that there's so much to learn from design, and that's what we're trying to do. And that's what we're disseminating out into the world as practitioners of design, or learners as well.
Yeah, we're always learning. There's always something to learn in design.
Thank you for listening to On the Edge with your hosts, Nita and Sylvia. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others or drop a comment and rating. Head over to sickhealth.ca to learn more about SICK, and check out all the links and resources in the episode show notes. Thanks, and stay tuned for future podcast episodes with On the Edge with SICK.